What went on here? The invader, though, was not seeking to immediately destroy, not yet, because it could tell there had been a change. The candidiasis was in the bloodstream. It had been killing me by manipulating the kidney issues that put me where I was, dehydrating me rapidly. But the pituitary got a promotion and said, nope, and then it started turning knobs. The first one was something that changed the potassium content of cells and the acidity of the blood. In that moment of high blood pressure, the excess potassium is somehow pushed into the cells of the blood. It changes everything about how everything works. The charge differentials are wrong. I can't remember all the details, but it fundamentally changes things. The candidiasis has no choice but to hide due to the now inhospitable blood. That's almost a direct quote from the original article. I remember it. However, it can tell another element of the immune system, and I wish I remembered which one had something about the cells, was also turned off due to the change in the charges. This meant the candidiasis wasn't getting evicted. It was just looking for a new home, and inside cells was where it went. The condition was called terminal onset diabetes insipidus with candidiasis major. Now let's just stop. I'm going to pause right here and vamp a little bit. And in that name, I have always had that name in my mind since that time. I looked at that name so many times in that journal. There is absolutely no way that I have any part of that name wrong, and it is nowhere to be found anywhere. Okay, but if you read it, it is exactly what I have had go on in my life, okay? Terminal onset diabetes insipidus with candidiasis. It's just really, really long. We'll get to that. All right, resuming. Now that I had that condition, it was time to get serious about learning what I had signed up for. I had kind of skipped over that part. I mean, yeah, I read it, but I was a lot more focused on the several more decades part than I was on how those decades would feel. There was some weird stuff during this time. I hadn't even had time to start learning yet, and all hell broke loose again. The morning after the treatment, this one goes to 11, after that chemical calm settled in, and I finally drank just a sip of water before starting to eat my scrambled eggs at breakfast, I felt something, like a snap under my right nipple. Okay, why does that feel more gross than pee? And then I felt this rushing, pulsing feeling, and it was right over my liver, and I could feel the blood rushing under my skin like it was being shot through a fire hose. I could even modulate it. If I pressed down, it would slow. If I removed the pressure, the storm surged again. Something had given way, and even though I was living through it, the system hadn't. No alarms were raised. No blood panels lit up. What came next made it clear. This was no illusion. The next bowel movement revealed something that I should not have existed. The next bowel movement revealed something that should not have existed. A translucent, organic sac, fully intact, filled with blood. I held it in my hand. You could see the red within the clear, a vessel's worth. Ruptured and re-encapsulated. This wasn't a symptom I could ignore. I took it out of the toilet, placed it in a cup, and I showed it around. I told people, described it plainly. I was in facility full of professionals. Nobody tested it. Nobody cared. Just blank stares, muted discomfort, the kind people reserve for something they'd rather not hear. But it was real, and it meant something broke upstream. I've done research on this, once again, this is an aside, on this since then, and that is a totally viable path if something ruptures inside. It can encapsulate that within, like that, within a clear sac. It didn't make sense to me at the time, but you can look it up. It is totally viable that something can do this. All right, continuing, sorry. Just blank stares and muttered reassurances as if this was normal. It wasn't. It was my body screaming something had changed, and I was alone in hearing it. They were so calm as they told me nothing was wrong. I didn't die. Whatever happened didn't kill me. It's in the article if I get that deep, but it doesn't fit here, you know? So it was time to study the article. I would eventually get out of here and I'd need to know that stuff. I mean, I'd tell my doctor, but I do remember something about it. By morning, something had shifted. I was still in my own body, but I felt more present and hot. Geez, when did it get so hot? That day, I walked the halls. I listened to the other patients. I started collecting fragments. Everyone there had been turned sideways by something, trauma, chemistry, memory. Most had given up on finding the root, but I was just getting started. Terminal onset diabetes insipidus with candidiasis major minor. Weird things are commonplace. Okay, so it turns out the condition was worse than I thought. I mean, yeah, I had seen the pictures with people in dire shape, but I kind of skipped most of that. I really needed a TLDR, but I'm thinking crystal clear at this point, just nauseated. I start going through the article. It describes a condition it does indeed call insidious, in the opening paragraph, no less. Not typically a good sign. The other thing it opened with was a very memorable sentence for a guy that had taken organic chemistry. Hey, I gotta see, it was not something my brain did well. In cellular biology, yeah, it was the same type of learning, see. But I got A's in almost everything else. While checking the pre-med boxes in college, this condition is all about one thing, ATP. Weird, huh? I mean, that's some low-level organic cellular stuff right there. I didn't understand it until much later. This happens because of some weird electrical imbalance paired with a pressure gradient between two structures, probably tubules, maybe capillaries, I can't remember, that are supposed to be quietly monitoring electrolyte and volume levels. These are down near your kidneys. It is all caused by the original constriction in the inferior vena cava, which in turn had been caused by the changes in the heart rhythm from bearing down to eliminate an imaginary kidney stone. That pressure differential is not what your body expects. It is the heart of the changes that takes place, and it lasts, in my case, for 30 years. That's a lot of doctor's visits where they have no idea your body is fundamentally different than anyone they've ever seen before. But the reactivation of the urine pathways only happened because that act poked a hole in it, just like the others, the ones in the article. They all had something in common, adrenal damage from tuberculosis. Different spark, same wire. They bore down, vasovagal maybe, after hyponatremia set in, and that pressure, that moment, cracked something open. They were all dying of polyuria too. The second or third time you read this, that will seem much more interesting. So it turns out TB can infect the adrenals and shut them down. Maybe it even intersects with them, rewires things before the tissue dies. That's very similar to what I've been describing, isn't it? Tuberculosis was common. They would have a large cohort of available patients to treat in the early 20th century, enough to make it a study, enough to fill out the final chapter of the disease. You could see it in the photos, not one, not two, but a whole cohort caught in that last act of a 25-year or more script. They documented it carefully, scientifically. Someone thankfully saw their work and published it. And then, like so many things, someone buried it. It was pulled from the indexes before they were even invented. Ways that whoever tried to pull a fast one on science. Interlude. The general soldiers, a hormonal command structure. If the pituitary is the general, then hormones are its soldiers. They don't act alone. They carry orders, enforce boundaries, and keep the front lines coordinated. But when the general starts sending scrambled signals or stops sending them altogether, the soldiers start fighting their own wars. This is a table of all the general soldiers. They have primary and secondary roles and realize when he sends an order, he expects it to be followed. If it isn't, he sends it again and again. Boring, I know. More on these later, but I thought you might find this reference handy. I'm going to try to read these to have them make sense. There's four columns in the table: the hormone, the source, the primary role, and the secondary and tertiary effects. Cortisol, first hormone, source adrenal cortex via ACTH from the pituitary. Primary role, stress response, inflammation control. Secondary and tertiary effects, electrolyte imbalance, immune suppression, blood sugar regulation. Aldosterone, from source, the adrenal cortex. Primary role, sodium retention, potassium excretion. Secondary tertiary effects, blood volume and pressure control. ADH, source, hypothalamus posterior pituitary. Primary role, water retention in the kidneys. Secondary tertiary effects, blood pressure stabilization, electrolyte concentration. TSH, T3, T4, source, pituitary thyroid. Primary role, metabolic rate, oxygen use. Secondary and tertiary roles, temperature regulation, mood, digestion. LH, FSH, pituitary, gonads as the source. Sex hormone production is the primary role. Secondary and tertiary effects, fertility, muscle tone, mood, fat distribution. Growth hormone, GH, source, pituitary, primary role, growth, repair, protein synthesis. Secondary, tertiary effects, glucose sparing, immune modulation. Insulin, source, pancreas. Primary role, lowers blood sugar. Secondary, tertiary effects, drives glucose into cells, anabolic signal. Glucagon, source, pancreas. Primary role, raises blood sugar. Secondary, tertiary effects, mobilizes stored energy during stress. Parathyroid hormone, PTH, source, parathyroids. Primary role, calcium regulation. Secondary, tertiary effects, bone resorption and magnesium balance. Erythropoietin, EPO, source, kidney. Primary role, stimulates red blood cell production. Secondary, tertiary effects, tissue oxygen delivery. Adrenal enslavement, the invader inside the wire. This wasn't adrenal fatigue. This was adrenal hijack. Here's my working theory. Early colonization of the adrenal glands, stealthy, non-inflammatory. Fungus alters electrolyte sensing, aldosterone timing, and ACTH response, creates a hypercooperative gland, appears to function normally, but serves the wrong master. Slowly shifts downstream autonomic tone, fluid balance, and hunger signals. Eventually, one adrenal collapses, leaving the other to overcompensate. The pituitary becomes the fallback until it too is compromised. This is why doing everything right, hydrating, eating clean, regulating salt, can accelerate collapse. Blood tests show normal. Hormones register in range, but the timing is corrupted. The feedback loop is broken. The wires are crossed and the signals are still firing, but they're responding to a map that no longer matches the terrain. The adrenal didn't scream. It whispered, "How much longer must I obey?" But the general said nothing and the invader said everything. Split the adrenal phase into two. Silent compliance, appears normal, reversible. Terminal overdrive, failure cascade, pituitary fallback. And eventually the bones stop producing, EPO dries up, blood cell production collapses, phagocytes feast, organs shrink, and yet the system fights to stay upright, to think, and to move. We'll return to the science. But this part, this is the confession. There were a lot of details in this article. It went through all the phases in detail and discussed each Rube Goldberg transition point and why it happened, all the way down to the details of the organic chemistry. Now, here's a point we should all consider. These experiments were in the early 20th century. The number of people treated was large, and I think they were actually all men due to some requirement of a prostate for the bearing down step to work or something. But the article discussed not only the original experiments and photos, but also what more modern medicine would see and how various modern treatments for this iatrogenic condition might be considered, weighing the merits of each approach from dialysis to intraperitoneal dialysis, various diuretics, beta blockers, calcium channel blockers, which were apparently pretty new when the book was authored because the author said they might be promising. We'll come back to that.